Welcome back to another moment of time being. A moment unlike any other moment before this, but completely dependent on every moment before this. As we go along through this text of Dogen Zenji today, feel free to stop at any time and ask and excuse the fact that there's a big cough drop in the side of my mouth as I talk. So we're up to for those who have this text. If you don't, you're welcome to just listen along or look at the person next to you. The second paragraph on page 3. The time being is entirely actualized without being caught up in nets or cages. The Uji is Genjo. The time being is actualized or manifested. And this is the Genjo of Genjo Koan, important term for Dogen. Here combined, the time being is manifested. That's how the time being presents itself to us, not as an abstract idea or unexperienceable mystical phenomena. The time being is actualized. It's manifested here and now, as here and now, as this time and this being. Remembering this basic point as we continue through all these details of how Dogen celebrates Buddha Dharma, this very basic point that we can practice while we're listening, while we're in such a class, of just the time being manifesting here and now, of us being right here in this particular, not even in this particular zendo, right, but in this particular cushion, in this unique Dharma position, dependent on all the other cushions and on the whole zendo itself. Whatever we're thinking, our thoughts are also manifestations of the time being, and our feelings and body mind experience are all manifestations of the time being. Without being caught up in nets or cages of our discriminating thoughts, the nets or cages that trap us in thinking that we're some other time and place than here and now. Here's some other translations of this part. In short, without any cessation of restrictions and hindrances, existence time is realized. In short, time present is always made real without ridding ourselves of hindrances and delusions. So that one takes a kind of opposite viewpoint. Instead of saying this time being is free from nets and cages, it's without ridding ourselves of these. The ever-present time being of which I am speaking cannot be snared like some bird by net or cage. It's what's manifesting before us. In some, it cannot be ensnared or arrested. It's the manifestation of being time. No nets or cages remain for long. All is the immediate presencing, here and now, of being time. So, this sums it all up, the basic point. Maybe every sentence, abiding in its Dharma position, sums up the whole fascicle of Uji, but that one particularly, very straightforward. Now, Deva kings and heavenly beings appearing right and left are the time being of your complete effort right now. You know, the Deva realm is like the six realms of Buddhist cosmology. Starting down at the bottom, there's the hell beings, the hungry ghosts, the animal realm. Somewhere in the middle there is the human realm, where we temporarily manifest as in the time being. And there's the kind of fighting gods, the Asuras, who want to be devas. They're almost devas, but they're trying to kind of capture the deva territory. These all represent different, you know, psychological states. And then the highest, in a way, is this deva, or celestial being, godlike realm. And the deva kings of the four directions are, none of the footnotes mention this, but usual setup of a Zen monastery there's a mountain gate as you enter, and usually in that mountain gate are these four deva kings on right and left of you. In China, both China and Japan have this kind of setup. They're like the Dharma protectors. So we have Ida Sonten out here at our little Zen Center gatehouse, who is a Dharma protector. And technically, Ida Ten is, Ten means Deva in Japanese, actually. So I think some people translate it as Skanda Deva in Sanskrit, our protector. He's the one of the like thousand sons of the Western Deva king. He's like a Deva prince. Anyway, in China you see these very wrathful, fierce beings guarding the four directions as you enter the monastery. Like literally like 20-foot tall statues, bigger than the Buddha. They're like the biggest statues in the temple for some reason. I think they're just keeping out all evil forces. And maybe we could say, at the entrance to the temple, they're wiping away all half-heartedness. I think that's maybe why they're so big. When you walk between them, you feel like really small, and like all you can have this feeling like all your kind of petty stuff is just being like kind of smashed by these giant guardian deities, and then you pass through peacefully. And once you pass through them, then you're like a new being. I think these things are very symbolic, but for centuries and centuries, that's been the entrance of a Zen temple. And so, again, no notes made references, but I had that image because it says appearing right and left. So when you enter the sanctum of a Zen temple, at the entrance, where you can question whether you wish to enter wholeheartedly, are these deva kings, and you can imagine behind them these whole deva assemblies appearing right and left. And they are the time being of your complete effort right now. So are they guarding our complete effort? Does our complete effort meet those beings as we enter the gate? surrounded right and left. So this complete effort right now is this term Jinriki, which means like total exertion, wholehearted effort, or complete combustion. The Jin as complete or total, the character is made up of these three parts, with a hand holding a brush and an empty vessel. So for those who were just in calligraphy class, you made complete effort, you used up all the ink in the vessel, so you have an empty ink vessel, but your hand holding the brush, like you've just expended all your calligraphy effort. The ink's gone. So that's this character, Jin, the kind of Chinese etymology of the character. And Riki is like power or strength. You may know those terms, like Jo Riki is samadhi power. There's Ji Riki and Tan Riki, meaning like self power and other power, when they compare like Zen and Pure Land Buddhism and so on. But together they mean like complete exertion, wholehearted effort, complete combustion, or total functioning or effort. The celestial monarchs and celestial beings manifesting in the regions right and left are being time now exerting their whole strength. So, their strength in that translation. The Deva kings and Deva multitude actually presencing to the left and right are even now being time that put forth my total exertion. So, it's not clear whether like our total exertion is meeting these Deva kings right and left, or their total exertion is meeting us, or we can't find any difference really. There's just expression of total exertion in passing between these Dharma protecting Deva kings. The time being of all beings throughout the world in water and on land is just the actualization of your complete effort right now. Or, in addition, it is a time when beings of water and land are making every effort to manifest. Or, the other myriad being times of water and land are now manifesting, exerting their whole strength. And everywhere else in the universe, the hosts of being times in water and on earth are now immediately manifesting themselves in the full power that I exert. Water and land beings, everyone's included here in this total exertion of practicing the time being. All beings of all kinds in the visible and invisible realms are the time being actualized by your complete effort, flowing due to your complete effort. So, all beings of all kinds, visible and invisible, are the time being actualized by your complete effort, flowing due to your complete effort. So this is the realm of interdependent arising, where our practice effort makes the world flow, makes all beings come alive, and together we manifest the whole time being. So this passage about how our effort is actually actualizing the workings of the whole universe is... similar to Dogen's other fascicle called Undivided Activity. Some of you might know this one. Shobogenza Zenki. Undivided Activity, or Total Dynamic Working. The Whole Works. Zenki. a short and very sweet chapter of Dogen's, where he brings up, like he does many places, time of the moment. Like, for example, realization is birth. Birth is realization. At the time of realization, there's nothing but birth totally actualized, nothing but death totally actualized. So it's all about, oh, as always, at this time and place. But this is the pivotal central passage here, I think, in Undivided Activity. And see if this gives the sense to you of how our total practice and our total effort is manifesting the time being of all beings. Dogen says, birth is just like riding in a boat. You raise the sails and you steer. Birth and life are actually the same character in Chinese, so you could also say life is like riding in a boat. You raise the sails and you steer. Although you maneuver the sail and the pole, the boat gives you a ride, and without the boat you couldn't ride. But you ride in the boat, and your riding makes the boat what it is. Investigate a moment such as this. In other words, this is happening this moment, and every moment is like this riding in a boat. At just such a moment, there's nothing but the world of the boat. The sky, the water, and the shore are all the boat's world, which is not the same as a world that is not the boat's. Thus, you make birth what it is. You make birth your boat, birth. When you ride in a boat, your body, mind, and environs together are the undivided activity of the boat. The entire earth and the entire sky are both the undivided activity of the boat. Thus, birth is nothing but you. You are nothing but birth, or life. So this undivided activity is that the boat that we call life is giving us a ride, but we have to raise the sails and steer. So it's not really like it's a passive thing, like life's giving us a ride, so we just sit back and enjoy the ride. There is that aspect of riding in a boat, but then there's also, we have to come forward and raise the sails and steer and maneuver the sail and the pole. Although you maneuver the sail and pole, the boat gives you a ride. So get a sense of that, how that works. It's like our effort to come forth and direct the course of the boat does affect the whole boat, and the whole boat affects us. So in a larger sense, it's like all beings, our life includes all beings, and all beings practicing their life give us our life. We know this in many just practical ways. Our life is sustained by the efforts of many, many beings. And yet, us living our life also sustains many beings, both in positive and negative ways. It's not only like pure giving, although we can look at it that way. Sometimes it's like we affect people in ways that are painful to them, but still, it's total intimate interaction. So all beings of all kinds in the visible and the invisible realms are the time being actualized by your complete effort, flowing due to your complete effort. The boat moves along due to your effort of raising the sails and rowing, and yet all beings, the boat of all beings, gives you the ride. This is the time being. Closely examine this flowing. Dogen uses this phrase throughout and in other chapters too, closely examine. Sangaku means like study and learn, or meet and study. So just a reminder that if we think of Dogen's practice is just letting go of all thinking and just being present without any investigative study of what's happening, it's surely not so. Many times Dogen says, closely examine or thoroughly study and learn this flowing. Without your complete effort right now, nothing would be actualized, nothing would flow. Yes?
So the boat flows, but time doesn't flow?
The boat flows? Or flow?
But time doesn't flow?
Well, what does he... Didn't he say earlier that the time is flowing? Well, right here, closely examine this flowing. Without your complete effort, nothing would flow. And I think earlier, we had this whole section about flowing on the previous page. About the time, the middle of page 2, and this one, the time being has the quality of flowing. So-called today flows into tomorrow today. So there is this... And in this image, I'm thinking of the boat is actually like the time being. I think actually the time being is like the flowing boat that gives us a ride. We can't get a hold of exactly what the boat is. In other words, that passage from Zenki, Undivided Activity, is I really appreciate so much because it's like, if we're not, in other words, we're not in control of the boat, and yet we can't, we're not out of control, you know, we can't be exonerated from all responsibility. We have to raise the sails and steer, but we can't actually see the whole boat at the same time. It's very mysterious how this works, and we do our little part. It's like we're actually, the boat's in this thick fog. Flowing through this thick fog. We can't even see the top of the mast and the sail up there. We just see this little bit in front of us. All we can see is the tiller and a little bit of the sail here in this little hole in the fog. And we have to trust that the boat's not going to carry us into a rock. And yet if we say we trust so much that we're not even going to steer, that's too much. We've gone too far. We have to do our part, but we're not really in control. And the time being seems like this. And our effort, of our little tiny effort in this little hole of fog of steering and adjusting the sails, gives life to all these other beings. And I would say that's what Dogen's calling this wholehearted effort, this complete combustion. It's just a little window of non-fog. And maybe that's even fog too. Maybe we can't see anything, but we can feel the tiller and the sail. So yeah, the boat is flowing, time is flowing. And just to go back, because we're getting back into the flowing theme again, that term flowing, Kyoraku, which means like passage or regeneration. It's Kyo is the same character that we use for sutra. Kyo or Gyo, like the Hanya Shin Gyo, and Nejuku Kanan Gyo. It's the Chinese way of sutra, and the character they use for sutra, because I think the Sanskrit word sutra means the same thing, is like the, it means like passage or passing through, or the vertical warp in when you're weaving. Does Edie know about how weaving works? Is it the vertical threads are the warp? So I think they use this character in China and Japan for the warp of fabric that passes through the fabric, you could say. And sutra in Sanskrit is related to the word suture, which is like to sew up, stitch up a wound. And it's like, I think because the old sutras were constructed like a bunch of leaves put together, and the string that ties them together is the sutra. I think I've heard that this is the etymology of the ancient Sanskrit word sutra. So they chose a Chinese character that means the same thing. It means like to pass through. Also, it's the Qin Hin is a different pronunciation, but it's the same character. The Qin is this passage. You could say maybe even flowing. And Hin means walking. So it's not really sutra walking, but it's like to walk, you know, walking through, passing through, almost like the walking that's like that vertical thread that's just going through, walking in a straight line together. It's Qin Hin. So that's the Kyo of Kyo Raku, and Ryaku is kind of like, as I understand it, like emphasizing like a separate moment or in, like a particular stage or moment. So together it means like this flow of particular moments, as I understand, Kyoryaku, that is translated here as flowing. Other people, continuance, moment to moment, maybe flow on passage. Passage or flowing.
One translation says all the moments are connected.
Yeah.
So it gives the stitching the feeling of, you know, like a train.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if not flow, at least each of these individual ineffable moments are somehow
indivisibly connected. Yeah, definitely. And so I think those two sides, you know, like a lot of these concise kind of two-word compounds that Dogen uses, like being and time, are, you know, we could say are two different things, but completely connected. The same with this Kyoryaku. It's like this flow that we usually don't think of as particular moments, combined with particular moments, so that combination. So he was probably quite intentional in choosing this dynamic word that has both of these aspects. All beings of all kinds in the visible, invisible realms are the time being actualized by your complete effort, flowing due to your complete effort. Closely examine this flowing. Without your complete effort right now, nothing would be actualized, nothing would flow. This is also very characteristic of Dogen's understanding of practice, that that although the whole world is flowing and blooming life all the time, it's like our wholehearted effort like meets that and fully brings that to life. We can't say it's not happening without our effort, but there's almost that implication that something is not really alive without our are fully expressing our life. And we can understand this effort in different ways, but how about that? It's just a moment-to-moment way, just fully expressing our life energy here and now. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Basically, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, so, am I right in thinking that this sentence, closing the sentence, is flowing without your complete effort right now, nothing would be actualized, nothing would flow? It's basically saying, without you being alive.
Yeah. There's no dynamic world. It's like we from a mind-only perspective, the world, the flowing world of life is created by each of us. Yeah, it's a big topic, this mind-only teaching, because...
If I have to ask additionally to that, that's actually also a really, really unnerving and scary thought.
Mm. That we've created. Yeah, in a way, it's like us seeing them as bad, right? Is like, I mean, it might sound like far-fetched to say that, like, we're creating the world, and, you know, if we were to die this moment, then the whole world would cease. But we're talking about the mind-only school, as of all of Buddha's teachings, are coming from this very experiential point of view. So from the point of view of our experience, isn't it true that if we die this moment, our world, as we know it, dies? And so then we say, but actually, isn't there another world beyond as we know it? Then that one goes on. And this is a little kind of simplification maybe of the mind-only thing, but you could say, well, actually, if there were a world outside of our experience, we don't know anything about it, by definition. by definition. We could say, well, scientists have proven some various things outside of our experience, but that was their experience. And actually, from a strictly mind-only point of view, it's like, it's not even their experience, it's like our experience of their words. We can't get out of our experience. We can't say, well, there's some objective world outside of our experience. And this school, or this mind-only way of understanding is really just like very closely looking at that very point and saying, well, can we really find anything, can we really prove anything outside of our own experience? And I think a lot of Buddhist teachings point this out, but that school really zooms in on this particular point and says that. So, is there does the world cease when I die? Well, my world ceases when I die, and my world is actually different than your world. Each of our worlds is like a completely unique world, and and that's, again, the Dharma position. Each of our worlds is abiding in its own Dharma position, but it's completely interconnected with all of each other's worlds, which is why we can communicate and agree on various things and understand things together. Mm-hmm.
but also, I think we're also talking about the koan that you enacted at the party of the tigers and then the strawberry. It's as if that strawberry was always there, but there's something
which sometimes takes tigers right and left.
With the whole world, not just the tigers, but the whole world that includes tigers and strawberries. Is that what you're meaning by Dogen is encouraging us to live our life fully?
Yeah.
So nothing flows in our life unless we engage in it fully.
And vice versa.
So what is vice versa?
Like nothing flows in the world, in our world, if we don't engage it fully. Like, just a practical example of that is like, if we get into like a depression or a funk, it seems like the whole world is like dismal and bleak and like not flowing and not alive. It seems like it's not really about us. It seems like the world looks dark. But then we just raise up a little bit of energy and just go out the door and start engaging the world, and then it starts to come alive. So it's like, for us, our world is kind of like not really alive when we're not really alive. And it's like, if we're just waiting for the world to come knock on our door and give us life, in a way it is doing that, but we have to engage it too. I think this is a good example of like getting stuck in depression. We're like, but everything, all the conditions are against me. It's like, I'm waiting for the right conditions before I go out the door. It's like, well, the right conditions are right there, but like we're actually blocking it because we're not taking the tiller. So like to just step out the door, take the tiller and sails, even though we're not in control really, but just take an unknown step onto the front porch. And then see if the world comes forward to meet us. See how the boat then starts carrying us.
You've got to get that phlegm flowing.
Phlegm flow, yeah. Do not think flowing is like wind and rain moving from east to west. The entire world is not unchangeable, not immovable. It flows. Flowing is like spring. Spring with all its numerous aspects is called flowing. When spring flows, there's nothing outside of spring. Study this in detail. Spring always flows through spring. Although flowing itself is not spring, flowing occurs throughout spring. Thus, flowing is complete at just this moment of spring. Examine this thoroughly, coming and going. Spring, so, as Dogen says in the Genjo Koan, in his discussion about Dharma positions, like spring is a complete expression, this moment. We don't call winter the beginning of spring or summer the end of spring. It's like there's just spring. It's not completely disconnected from winter and summer, but we don't really say that that winter turns into spring. It's like spring is just a complete expression. And what is spring but the all the things of spring, like the flowers and the bees and the scent of the air, all those things in spring. It's inconceivable. It has no like particular boundaries, and yet it's a particular Dharma position of spring. It is very particular. Like, you know when it's spring. It's not like it's not just a question or an abstract. So here's another little section of Dogen about spring and the time being. We're getting a little like overview of the whole Shobo Genzo from these chapters here. Dogen really does speak about time. I didn't notice till I started studying this, but time comes up in many, many fascicles. This one actually even includes Uji compound. This is called Flowers in the Sky, Kuge, which is an interesting phrase in itself, because Ku means sky and it also means emptiness. It's what's used to translate shunyata, like in the Heart Sutra, where it says emptiness is Ku, but it's also used for sky and air. So, like Japanese airlines, we often see this. It's like, you know, Japan emptiness. Japan Airlines. Japan Sky. They use it for airline companies. So, Kuge is this already dynamic thing here. Flowers in the Sky, which is this. Without getting into what the whole fascicle is about, it's just quite a dynamic term, because it means it's this old image from the sutras about when you have cataracts or various eye diseases, it's like the image they use in old India is like it's like you see flowers in the sky when they're not really there. Like there aren't really flowers, but the little like objects moving around on your eye look like flowers. So they're called sky flowers. Flowers in the sky. And Dogen sometimes says, I think he says maybe at the end of Bendawa or something, he's like, excuse me for going on and on like this. As I've been, speaking, many sky flowers have bloomed. Meaning like many illusions, many imaginary things that you maybe think are real because I'm saying them have blossomed. But these are all this, everything I'm saying is just sky flowers. It's good to keep in mind when hearing basically everything that's being said by anyone are flowers in the sky, empty flowers. And Dogen does his usual thing with that idea, but here he's saying, the opening of blossoms is three before, three after, which comes from another koan. To fulfill these numbers, all phenomena are gathered and make the blossoms colorful. Let this understanding manifest and fathom spring and autumn. It's not only that spring and autumn have blossoms and fruit, but the time being always has blossoms and fruit. So he uses the term uji here. It's not only that spring and autumn have blossoms and fruit, but the time being always has blossoms and fruit. So spring and autumn are the time being, and blossoms and fruit are actually just like manifestations of the time being. As is everything, but in this case, flowers and sky flowers, and are there any flowers that aren't sky flowers? Oh, what did Thoreau say?
talking about how he spent his time, and how he spent his time sometimes.
In the woods.
Caught in the bloom of the present moment.
Mm.
He would sit on his porch as the sun goes up and sit in the bloom of the present moment.
Mm.
And then it would be noon, and he couldn't remember a thing except a bird here and some blossoms here and some leaves falling there, just spending time in the bloom of the present moment. And so this blossoming and being time is...
That's beautiful. Maybe Thoreau is one of the first American Zen masters. It sounds like he just sat there in the present, and I think he said something like, if you sit still and quiet long enough in the woods, everything will come to you and reveal itself. So some passage like that in Walden also.
He wanted to confront things in their different phrase, but something like in their original nature, so that when he came to die, he wouldn't realize he hadn't lived.
Mm. And the simplicity of the moment. And it was all about creating a really simple situation to more directly experience the present.
The essential. I think it's the essential. To confront the essential.
So he had to go out and live in this small cabin.
Build a cabin, hold his and sit.
And if he knew about Zazen, he maybe wouldn't have had to go any special place to do it.
That's right.
He could create that simple situation where everything comes and reveals itself in any place. Mm-hmm. But of course, nature offers offers itself very directly. Say for the time being that this isn't continuing with Kuge here, with sky flowers. Say for the time being that an obscurity and the eyes are equal, the sky and flowers are equal. As obscurity and the eyes are beyond birth, the sky and flowers are beyond birth. As all things are reality, obscurity and flowers are reality. Do not discuss the past, present, and future. Do not discuss these three times. Just as he says, say for the time being, which is, I think it's implying that the time being is not a matter of, you know, past, present, and future as we usually think of them as these static kind of fixed categories of time. And time being is beyond our ideas of it. As flowers in the sky are not conditioned by beginning, middle, and end, and as they are not obstructed by birth and death, flowers in the sky cause birth and death to be birth and death. You know, there's this dynamic working of everything giving rise to everything else. Thus, when the time comes, flowers open. This is the moment of flowers, the arrival of flowers. At this very moment of flowers arriving, there's no other way. At that very moment, such a song from the modern world of communication must have arisen. There's no other way. Plum and willow flowers unfailingly bloom on plum and willow trees. You see the flowers and know plum and willow trees. You understand flowers by looking at plum and willow trees. Peach and apricot flowers have never bloomed on plum and willow trees. Plum and willow flowers bloom on plum and willow trees, and so on. So this is, again, about Dharma positions of particular flowers and particular trees. It's like everything is beyond our ideas of it, and yet it manifests according to very specific conditions. Things don't arise randomly. Things manifesting in their dharma positions is not a matter of happenstance or randomness. It's due to very, very particular conditions being just lined up so that that willow tree gives rise to the willow flower, and it's never a peach flower. But I think that, you know, the fact that conditions are so particular often fools us into believing that that we've got a grip on it, or that we know how that works, because it seems so predictable that willow trees have always given rise to willow flowers. So it seems quite challenging to rest in the not knowing mind when in the realm of very predictable occurrences. Like, very difficult to look at a willow tree in spring and go, like, I wonder if it'll be a peach blossom this year. Very hard to do that. But that kind of childlike openness and not knowing readiness is a practice of the time being. Just being ready for anything, and then there it is, willow flowers again, a miracle. I think that's the advantage, that's the gift of having such openness, is that instead of, oh yeah, willow flowers again this year, on the willow tree, why isn't it ever peach flowers? But it's like then everything becomes like a miracle, an unpredictable miracle, manifestation of the time being and its particularity according to conditions. Like a cold just follows the same pattern. So it's like after a few days it kind of like dries up in the nose realm, and then there's coughing and things like this. But instead of thinking like, oh yeah, I have a cold, like and that's something that like is no fun, and instead of that, like, wow, what a miracle that the body can like produce all this phlegm. And it can like, and it's very kindly taking care of itself by not letting the phlegm drip into the lungs by doing this highly evolved activity called coughing to keep it out there. It seems like just another annoying thing, but I think isn't there one of those like key moments of the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha like coughs? Does anyone remember that part? There's some chapter in the Lotus Sutra where he's just about to teach it or something like that, and like there's like all the light beams are coming out, and like the Buddha like snaps his fingers and coughs or something like that. I have to look it up. But to be able to cough like that, kind of like a cough that's never occurred before, a cough that like shakes the thousandfold universe, and a cough that like teaches the whole Lotus Sutra in one sound. I want to have that kind of cold. Study this in detail. Spring always flows through spring. Although flowing itself is not spring, flowing occurs throughout spring. (Clears throat) I mean, I could imagine Dogen saying elsewhere, flowing itself is spring. But here he says, flowing itself is not spring, but flowing occurs throughout spring. You know, it's like, we're not going to just mush everything together into one thing and call it flowing. We're going to say there's flowing and spring and this total dynamic working, the way that flowing and spring interact together, maybe the point here. Flowing occurs throughout spring. Thus, flowing is complete at just this moment of spring. Examine this thoroughly, coming and going. In your study of flowing, if you imagine the objective to be outside yourself, or if you imagine objects to be outside yourself, and that you flow and move through hundreds and thousands of worlds, for hundreds, thousands, and myriads of eons, or kalpas, you have not devotedly studied the Buddha way. So this is a dynamic section here. So this one sounds like, well, again, we're talking about mind-only school, so that's particularly about the objective, imagining the objective to be outside yourself, or imagining objects to be outside yourself, is the definition of the basic delusion of all beings, according to mind-only school, is we imagine, like, that this piece of paper is outside myself. And mind only would say, no, this is like not outside the mind. it is mind. It's everything is mind or manifestation of consciousness. And the point of such a teaching, of course, is that to live in that way where we're so intimate with things, we see how we're creating our world and other beings, and there's no separation. It's the world of no separation at all. The mind-only pure land is the realm where there's not even the slightest bit of separation, not even like I'm over here and like Nanette's right there. Even if we're like this close, there's no separation. And even if we're like way over on the other side of the world, there's no separation because we are creating each other. And this is the path to the freedom from suffering, according to mind only, because if we look at all our various forms of suffering, from the point of view of that teaching, we can really see that every type of discontent and suffering and conflict and distress that we have is believing that something or somebody or some situation is outside ourself. So if we really come to see how, yeah, that's basically that one, that projection of externality really is the cause of all difficulty. The more we come to see that, the more we can think, well, what if it wasn't really like that? And then we can start to open to these quite complex and challenging teachings, but like this, you know, gold mine, treasury of opportunity to just even slowly approach, even just a little bit open to this possibility that, like, things are not out there the way they appear to be. So, in this case, if you imagine objects to be outside yourself and that you flow and move through hundreds of thousands of worlds, of external worlds, for hundreds of thousands of myriads of eons, like external eons outside yourself, you've not devotedly studied the Buddha way. So saying, like, if both spatial phenomena and time seems to be outside yourself, this is not quite correct. Yes?
I'm sure that there's things that I don't completely understand, but I have to come back to this concept. And my question is, if these texts say that the
suffering is born from the fact that you do the separation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I mean the same thing, but I would alternatively say it's the grasping on to something like life,
mm-hmm.
that causes the suffering. I'm completely yeah. fine mm-hmm. with the concept that life as such is a principle which is maybe eternal, and it just happens, and I happen to be a bubble that is part or that came out of this principle, and I'm going to disappear like a bubble that raises out of the ocean, and then it's going to be gone again, but still there is an ocean, you know what I mean?
An ocean outside of you. See, in a way, like you're the bubble. I mean, in that kind of metaphor, the bubble is not really separate from the ocean, right? Or like a drop coming out of the ocean, or another one that's used is like a wave rising out of the ocean. Is actually, those images are sometimes used because it's not separate. It's like there's a wave as part of the ocean, but it like as it's like cresting up at the top of the wave, it looks down at the ocean and thinks I'm separate. So I think this is the key thing. So yeah, as you say, it might not be so different. If we feel like, you know, the universe created me and now I'm like outside of it, or I'm like, there's like me and the universe, like I'm separate from all of this. And separate, you know, we could spend a long time talking about what exactly that means, particularly from the point of view of mind only. But your point about grasping is really important, and that's the key thing, is that, you know, from earliest Buddhist teachings, grasping is, we could say, the cause of suffering, or we could even, strictly speaking, grasping is suffering. Like that first teaching, when the Buddha's, that we chant sometimes in the morning, the Buddha's very first sutra, right, he says, what is suffering? He's defining all these things. It's in brief, summing it up, the definition of suffering is grasping the five skandhas. We could say grasping body and mind, and to expand that, particularly from a mind-only point of view, body and mind, mind only includes the whole world, right? So grasping mind as the world and grasping anything is suffering. Not even so much like it leads to, but that's what we call suffering, grasping. So, in mind only, they talk about, they basically say that it's impossible to like have an external world without grasping it. At a very, you know, you could, there's greater and lesser grasping. But, so they talk about subject and object are defined as grasper and grasped. As soon as you have a subject and object, as soon as you have that basic duality, that split, we call that a grasper and a grasped. And grasping in this sense could be very, very subtle. Just like, you know, I see this as a watch. Like, I'm not really like attached, like I could be really attached to it. It's my watch and like it better last forever and so on. But that would be like a bigger grasping. But even just to see a watch outside myself, according to this school, is called grasping. Very, very subtle grasping at dualistic appearances as real. And the very subtle one, that there's a watch here, is a setup for like, I might be kind of neutral about it, this particular watch, but the situation's already set up that if I start to like it a little bit, I can easily grasp it, or I start to dislike it a little bit. I'm either going to really get into it and strongly grasp it, or I'm really going to reject it as soon as I believe that it's an external appearance. And of course, all the emptiness teachings of like the Heart Sutra and so on, same point. If we see things truly exist, either as external objects or inherently exist in any way, it's going to be, according to these teachings, basically impossible to not grasp them, and therefore to not suffer in a tiny, tiny way. But that seed is like the seed for all the huge ways. That's why that like emptiness teachings are so important.
Well, at least I know that this whole concept is
That you would what? That you will be struggling with problems?
For now, I'm completely fine with thinking that Mars is going to be there once I'm gone.
But your version of Mars won't be there, right? And your version of Mars might be slightly different than my Mars, right? So, I mean, this might be oversimplifying, but you could say, well, my Mars will be gone, but there'll be, like, the real Mars. And this is where it gets tricky, right? The real Mars, apart from my idea of Mars, but this mind-only school is, says, wait a second. What do you mean, the real Mars, apart from your idea of Mars? Well, then, the real idea that's, the real Mars is like the scientist's idea of Mars. I don't really understand, but they do. Then we, well, what scientists? So, to keep examining, like, is there some objective Mars that's, and yeah, this is what we kind of got into in this class. And I hope people might enjoy, again, because that's on the calendar for 2012 is the Lankavatara Sutra, which they say is Bodhidharma's, what Bodhidharma brought from India to China, according to Zen history. So it was kind of like the origin of Zen Sutra, and it's considered a mind-only, it brings up these mind-only teachings, as well as Buddha nature. So, to be continued. So, we're at this point where let's compare this section about flowing is like spring. That was maybe more straightforward. How about the part about the objective outside yourself? So this is the part where Kaz Tanahashi says, in your study of flowing, if you imagine the objective to be outside yourself and that you flow and move through hundreds and thousands of worlds, for hundreds and thousands of myriads of eons, you have not devotedly studied the Buddha way. There's some pretty different ones here. Ordinary people think that continuity is beyond and that it passes east through many worlds and ones. This view shows lack of training. I don't know about that. Seems like it missed a lot of stuff. Oh, lack of training, yeah. If we think, in discussing the momentary passing of time, that circumstances are only individual things on the outside, while something which can pass from moment to moment moves east through hundreds of thousands of worlds and through hundreds of thousands of kalpas, then we are not devoting ourselves solely to Buddhist learning and practice. In discussing the momentary passing of time, if we think that there are only individual things that change on the outside, but that there is some real unchanging entity that passes from moment to moment, moving through all worlds and all times, we are becoming lax in studying Buddhism in our practice. So that had a different feeling there. I think that's Nishijima. Nishijima and Cross. Oh no, that's Michael Ado Luchford. So, so in discussing the momentary passing of time, if we think that there are only individual things that change on the outside, so that's pretty much the same so far, but that there is some real unchanging entity that passes from moment to moment, moving through all worlds and all times, we're not practicing thoroughly. So it's saying that if we think that there are that there are only these things moving on the outside, but that there's not some real unchanging entity that passes from moment to moment through all worlds. It's sounding like, in that one, it's saying that Dogen would be saying there is some real unchanging entity that's passing through, doesn't it? Well, I think he's saying, if we think that there are only these individual things, if we think that there are only individual things that change on the outside, but that there is, but that there is
abiding self.
Yeah, it sounds like that. If we think there are only individual things that change on the outside, but there is, we could maybe say also, but there is some real unchanging entity that passes from moment to moment through our worlds. On the inside.
That might be the context.
Or like, I was
if the outside changes, like, the inside stays.
Thinking there is a God or there's something that's impermanent.
Mm.
That isn't impermanent.
That isn't impermanent, yeah. Mm-hmm. If we think there are only these things that change on the outside, but there's some real unchanging entity on the inside, then that's off track. Yeah, like an eternal self or something. It's a kind of funny phrasing, because it's saying we think this, but we think this. They sound like almost like you say and we think this or and also.
If you think that you flow 200,000 of worlds, maybe the eons,
mm-hmm.
and if you think this is not which you could flow,
mm-hmm.
then you're not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no time outside experience.
Uh-huh.
So there's no such thing as time, they say, except in that moment of experience.
Yeah, right, right. I think they're all kind of pointing towards that direction, that there's this long, long expanse that we're going through. That would be... and when we think of this long expanse of future, for example, that's off track because there's only, like you say, the momentary experience.
This is where my silly question before came up, but about flow and there's this balance all the time between dynamic and disjunct time, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
In Uchi.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, he said there's only moment.
Yeah.
Moment.
Yeah.
And yet he says, one leads to the other somehow. He talks about flow.
Yeah, there's the flow. And
but the flow is only a moment-to-moment experience.
Uh-huh, yeah. If we project out, like, countless eons into the future, that's a just mental projection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even if we think we're going from today into tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only the moment, and yet there's that dynamic tension with the fact that it also is dependent on the past and future. So like that line in the Genjo Koan sums it up very nicely about, firewood abides in its phenomenal expression as firewood. It's talking about firewood turning into ash. It abides in its dharma position as firewood, which fully includes future and past, but also it's independent of future and past at the same time, which sounds contradictory. You'd say this, but that's how the Dharma position is. It's totally independent. It's its own world of a Dharma position, of firewood or of ash or something. But it fully includes, is a nice way of saying, dependent on past and future. It includes, this moment includes the past and future. And isn't that the case with our own experience? Right now, there's just right now, but we have this whole imagination of our whole past and of our whole future, accurate or inaccurate as it may be, this moment does include the past and future. And this moment is independent of those ideas, those mental, mind-only creations of past and future. So it might sound contradictory, but isn't it actually in accord with our experience that this moment is independent of past and future and fully includes past and future? And that also could be seen as like, yeah, the flow of time that's like where you can't break it into particular moments and then particular moments or like the railroad tracks and the railroad ties. And that term kyo ryaku seems to bring that out, the kind of flow and the individual moments together. Another translation of this section is, for in speaking of transiting, I guess this is another word for flow, some may think of it in reference to some place physically apart from themselves, which can be reached by turning eastward, say, or by traveling past myriad worlds over millions and millions of eons. But such people are not concentrating simply on the study of Buddha Way. Or, in speaking of passage, if you think that the objective realm is outside and the phenomenon which passes through passes a million worlds to the east through a billion eons, in thinking thus, you're not concentrating wholly on the study of the Buddha Way. So if you're thinking the objective realm is outside and the phenomenon which passes through, like maybe it's, this one almost sounds like somebody approaching this mind-only view, right? That, like, well, actually not, right? Because it's like, you're still thinking that the objective realm is outside and the phenomena which passes and outside your mind passes through all these worlds. So the last one is, if in speaking of a passage, you imagine that the place of passage lies somewhere outside and the dharma of the one doing, the passage, moves toward the east like the spring. That's an interesting little interpretation. Does the east... it says the spring move eastward? How does that, would that work? Maybe that's a Chinese understanding. I mean, a day moves... Does it... A day moves eastward, but the sun moves westward. But the day... Us on the earth move eastward. But spring is not really a matter of east and west, right? If in speaking of a passage, you imagine that the place of passage lies somewhere outside, and the dharma of the one doing the passage moves toward the east, like the spring, through 100,000 worlds and over 100,000 kalpas of time, that is the result of not giving total devotion to the single-minded practice of the Buddha Way. Basically, it seems to be pointing towards thinking that there's something outside of our own personal experience that's like moving through time and space out there, and some abstract way that's not investigating thoroughly our own experience. If you imagine the objective to be outside yourself and that you flow and move through hundreds and thousands of worlds for hundreds, thousands, and myriads of eons, you have not devotedly studied the Buddha Way. This is like, the difference there is that it's saying that you flow, not that there's something that flows, right? You imagine the objective to be outside, the objects to be outside yourself, and that you flow and move through hundreds and thousands of worlds. Maybe even that, like, it's those worlds that you are flowing through. You're not outside yourself, but you're flowing through external worlds outside yourself and external time outside yourself. Flow. Yeah, what does it mean to, particularly if we're open to this concept of the Dharma position, that doesn't sound, it seems like a whole different thing than flowing, right? Like, how could a Dharma position flow?
Well, and he's kind of set us up a little by this very poetic paragraph on spring, and it's flowing, as if, kind of like Dennis's Mars, that there is this thing called spring, that includes blossoming and sap flowing and eggs hatching and are we to join that in the sense of, you know, we're also part of the dynamic functioning of the universe, you know, that we're not special, that we're not, you know, bodies, that we're not animal bodies outside of the whole dynamic flow of the sun and the moon and Mars.
Yeah, I think we have to see that the, if we're talking about this flow, that certainly we, or who we think of as we, which is just, you know, part of the mind-only thing too, is it's not like, you know, we think of like this body and mind, but that's also actually external. It's our version of me. There's no, we can't, you know, again, there's no objective me either. But that, of course, yeah, that each of what we call ourselves is part of the flow, or is, it's not even like there's the flow and then we're part of it. It's like we are the flow. And from the mind-only point of view, we'd be like, we're creating the flow also. So that seems very difficult to imagine. But I think that's why that total dynamic working passage of Dogen Zenki is, I think, pointing towards this. It's like the kind of, from a psychological point of view, the subjective self, it's like we have to come forward and make this great effort and steer and row within the flow. The flow is like the boat ride is flowing through the water. We have to do our little part, and yet the boat or the flow carries us. Yes?
Is He Jin King on flow?
Oh.
But it's not to be personal, it's loaded with big words.
Is it on this section of?
On this section, oh. Well. It's actually, there's a whole section on time, Ruchi. But
oh, is this mystical realist?
Yes. But if I read the, I won't read the passage to which he's referring, because I don't think we need that. But he says, He Jin King, temple passage was not so much a succession or contiguity of inter-epochal wholes, as it was a dynamic experience of an intra-epochal whole of the realized now, of the Tao Te Ching.
Is epochal, epochal means time?
Yeah, epics. From like we were just talking about flowing through those periods.
Long periods of time.
Temple passage was not so much a succession or contiguity of inter-epochal wholes, wholes, as it was a dynamic experience of an intra-epochal whole of the realized now, in which the selected memory of the past and the projected anticipation of the future were subjectively appropriated in a unique manner. In brief, continuity in Dogen's context meant dynamism. In this sense alone, Dogen allowed for the notion of flow in time. Well, the idea that even though there is only this moment, each moment has an implication of the possibility and potential for it.
Yeah, I think he's bringing it up too because we could easily get into, we're just talking about this moment, just here and now, always this moment. It sounds quite static, right? It sounds so limited, like just a little thing. And there is that aspect, but then if we just leave it at that, it starts to sound too narrow. So then, you know, halfway through this, he's bringing up flow at the same time. After he said, you know, each thing just abiding in its here and now Dharma position. But let's not forget the vast flow of dynamic activity and complete combustion of wholehearted effort.
There is a phrase in the Tibetan Buddhist, a subjective connection of the past and the future, something like that, which is a memory of the past and the future. This is the mind being the story, because the past and the future can only exist in the context of memory, experience, memory, etc. So for me, and I've been sitting here trying to figure out a way to say that, but for me, this moment is just continuous, and there is really only one moment. This dynamic now.
Yeah.
Our minds create flow as the moment dynamically evolves and seems to change. So that string of events that our mind experiences and remembers and projects from is flow is created by our mind.
Yeah, maybe that would be another way of talking about this. If Dogen picks up, yeah, he almost, we're saying he's positing this like mysterious thing called flow, but yeah, maybe just a matter of mental creation. And in fact, in the end, we can say that about anything that he's saying. It's all mental construction. But then it's showing, then there's, you know, accurate mental constructions and, you know, relatively speaking, more inaccurate ones. So, and just to keep us keeping us from getting stuck in any particular position, I think Dogen's often doing this. He goes down one certain track. We start to get somewhat comfortable with the way he's going. Yeah, and then but don't forget this side. Oh, okay, finally grabbed this over here, and then now we're back over here. That's a lot of what he seems to be doing in his unique way. So, next week we can get into the story of Yao Zhang. For the time being. May all beings rest in joyful ease in their Dharma positions, fully swimming wholeheartedly in the flow. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.